Good evening. Welcome to the Solera Report. Today is Thursday, November 1st, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm in Basel, Switzerland. I'll be here till Sunday, and then I'll be in New York City from the 4th to the 8th, and then fly back to Tennessee on Friday the 9th. I will be traveling only in the U.S. for the rest of 2018. I'm headed to the Texas Panhandle for Thanksgiving, and then up to Pennsylvania for a few days at Christmas. And that's it for the nomad life. We've done three great special reports that are public on the Solera Report. One with Alan Phillips, attorney, who is an expert in vaccine exemptions. Then Mind Control with Aaron and Melissa Dykes. And most recently, Michael Blansham on 5G. Mind Control and 5G are two issues I really want you to understand and be able to protect yourself against. The more we know, the more we understand, the more we can figure out how to protect ourselves and those we love. And 5G is coming. We need to know about it. Our theme tonight is the view from Switzerland. Whenever I'm in Switzerland, I always get the 360-degree view. Switzerland is a small country that's a population of approximately 8.5 million. That makes it smaller than Paris or New York City. It wouldn't even count as a megacity if it was simply an urban area. It has a very long tradition and history of doing business all around the world and on all continents. There's an exceptional effort by the Swiss people to be both professional and competent. Even the post office in Switzerland makes money. I can see why. I've been posting packages back to the United States, and I must say the service is quite impressive. I live in a town where the post office is quite impressive, so it's one thing I really appreciate. The Swiss culture is much older. It takes a longer, older view, a calmer view of everything. There is much greater financial literacy in my experience in the general population about how the money works. It's one of the advantages of not having a reserve currency, although a very attractive currency, because it requires you to really do business and take time to understand people everywhere. So what is the view from Switzerland? The world is holding its breath on the U.S. elections. These elections are not just domestic. They have very important global reach and impact. We've had a financial coup. There's now a consolidation of that coup. As I've said, for 2 years, we're moving from the people who ran the financial coup being in control to a whole new group of leadership being in control. It's the turnover. It's natural when you go from a phase that was as big as that to another. Think of it as globalization, now reverse globalization. We know we have indictments under seal piling up in the United States. Whatever happens, whether forced resignations or turnover or real indictments, no matter how public or private this is, it's going to have a major impact on global allies. So as the leadership in the U.S. turns over, their global allies are impacted. The election will have a lot to say about how loud or quiet the coup consolidation will be. And so global allies have skin in the game. The democratic strategy of blaming the 2016 election on Russia has failed. At the same time, the ground crew around the country who are waging war in terms of congressional races, gubernatorial races, have done a much better job. They've really stuck to nuts and bolts, and you have a lot of very attractive candidates. And those candidates have plenty of both domestic and international financing from what I can see. So even though the national strategies have been particularly ineffective, I would say the ground crew has been very effective sort of fighting for their candidates state by state. The election and voter roll tampering appears to be off the charts. And in the meantime, the financial markets are very unsettled, and I don't expect them to settle down until after the election. Money and markets. The markets came off the floor for the last 2 days. The last day in October, we got a bounce. So the S&P technically is not yet in the correction zone, but pretty much everything else still is, but it's looking much better with a little bit of a bounce. the U.S. dollar index up now 5.53% for the year. And fixed income, the long treasury ETF, TLT, down 8.68%. So slight improvement. The intermediate treasury ETF down 3.05%, and the bond aggregate down 2.36%. High yield bonds junk still is now in the negative area for the year, down 23 basis points. Equities, S&P now up 2.74% for the year. It doesn't look like a lot until you look at everything else. Home builders still hurting, down 22.69%. They were below 25%, so in bear territory 2 weeks ago or last week. VGK, the European ETF, now down 10%. Germany down 15.48%. That's back up from almost down 18% before. Developed markets minus North America down 9.38% for the year. The large cap China stocks down 13.76%. Small caps down 20.49%. That's the worst of the big indicators. The emerging markets down 16.34%. The commodity index almost flat, down 1.5%. Gold down 6.87%, silver down 14%, and oil up 15.14%. So oil up 15%, S&P up 2.75%, and everything else across the board down, down, down. It's still a sea of red ink. As I said, I think we're not going to see which way this is going to go until after the election. What I said in the last money market remains the same. I think we're 75% chance we're in a normal correction, although nothing's normal these days. But as I said, for 3 years, we're way overdue for a significant correction. So I think we're in correction territory. 25%, it's the beginning of the bear. So I just don't think that's likely. But of course, anything can happen, particularly if we see in the trade talks with China, if we see no resolution and no sort of new step to rebalance and we get a real trade war with China, then that could force it into a bear if it's bad enough. The thing that looks really bad these days is the rule of law. Politics in the U.S. and both in the U.S. and China do not inspire confidence in their currencies or securities markets. The good news for the U.S. is China looks worse. Of course, the people who look the worst right now are the Saudis. There may be an effort to assert adult supervision over the House of Saud after the Khashoggi killing. The Daily Mail and others report that King Salman's youngest brother, 76, is returning from exile to challenge the Crown Prince MBS or find someone who can. He would not be returning if he didn't have U.S. and U.K. guarantees. So that's an interesting step when, in addition, Mattis has come out and taken the position that he and Pompeo want the war in Yemen over. And so whether it's one of the older princes or Mattis pulling the rug out from under MBS on the war in Yemen, clearly there's a pushback quietly from the United States and certainly quiet while the election is going on. The U.S. has a real risk issue, and that is a full Saudi unravel could spill the beans on 9/11 and a lot of other corruption. So this is an extremely sensitive situation, but it wouldn't surprise me if MBS is out or certainly will have his wings clipped. So let's turn to the U.S. because all eyes really are globally on the U.S. this week as we come into midterm elections. The GOP clearly leads in the Senate and in the state houses. The House is a toss-up. If you look at Real Clear Politics, they show it going to the Democrats. I would be surprised. Well, I expect it to go to the Republicans. My guess is that the Republicans will hold the Senate with a small gain in senators and hold the House by an extremely narrow margin. A lot of it, unfortunately, may depend on the voter roll purges. The reports of tremendous voter roll purges on both sides of the House, but the Republicans control many more state houses, which is going to give them an advantage on the voter roll games. Now, if I'm right and the Republicans hold both the House and Senate, it means the consolidation of the financial coup will proceed on a more obvious basis. I would note the accusation that Weinstein has just gotten a new accusation regarding sexual abuse when it was thought he was moving finally towards a global settlement of all issues. So if they do hold House and Senate, then I think you're going to see purging and greater transparency. Needless to say, the Midianite thing is going to continue to blossom. The Midianite thing is my reference to the story of Gideon in Judges chapter 6 through 9 in the Old Testament, where Gideon's army brings light and vibration to the Midianites who've occupied Israel, and the Midianites jump up in the dark and kill each other. We've seen the rattling of skeletons in the closet everywhere. I put out a tweet today asking whether there was knowledge management in Boston being a connection between Whitey Bulger's death after alleged threats that he was going to talk, and whether or not that had any connection to the reorganization of the Harvard Management Company, which in 2017 basically announced it was going to lay off its entire internal staff, meaning, or half of its 230-person staff by the end of the 2017 calendar year, which meant a lot of deep knowledge was going to disappear from the organization. That's what you do when you're deleting databases. Bulger died after what appears to be a period of diesel therapy. Diesel therapy is what happens when you move a prisoner, and instead of moving them in a direct line, you leave them transporting for much longer periods of time. It can literally be a kind of torture. And for somebody with heart trouble who's 89 years old, diesel therapy is the kind of thing that can kill you. So it looks like they were hoping to kill him, or they may have been hoping to kill him with diesel therapy. Then when he finally got to his new location, he was basically murdered in his cell. But the thing that was the most notable about his death is the incredible media around it. It was as though there was a message being sent. And so it clearly looks to me like this was a hit that was condoned by the establishment. And the question, of course, is what was the information? What was the testimony they were afraid of? And then we have an article in the New York Times today of reporting that a 15-year-old girl's bones from a death in 1983, which has been unsolved, were found at the Vatican. You think, okay, the Midianite thing is happening. They're dishing out dirt and warning each other. I think it's just the tip of the iceberg. I've been warning for a long time about my concern about piratization after this election and the presidential election. It's clear that the corporate establishment and the political establishment are building up to more rounds of what I call piratization. Privatization being when you move an asset into the private sector at market value, piratization when you move it at discounts to market value. The Koch brothers have given $25 million to Utah State University, and if you look at the stipulations of the grant, they are expecting Utah to hire a number of professors. The Koch brothers will continue to have control of, or certainly influence, and I would say firing power over who those professors are and what they're doing. And the push is basically to build the intellectual capital and clout you need to privatize U.S. lands. I am extremely concerned about what the push could do to privatize the national forests and all sorts of natural land assets. So I put a link to that story about the funding at Utah State University. And I appreciate the subscriber who sent it, and I would definitely check it out. It's something we need to be attuned to. Deep learning AI is moving fast. I just wanted to read you a little section from one of the stories I put up on the in news, trends, and stories this week. It's not just burger flipping and banking. Artificial intelligence is now coming for lawyers. In a landmark study reported by Hacker Noon, 20 corporate attorneys specializing in corporate law and contract review were pitted against an AI in a contest to spot mistakes in 5 non-disclosure agreements, a commonly used legal document meant to keep people from divulging sensitive information. It didn't turn out well for the lawyers. The study carried out with leading legal academics and experts says that LawGeek AI, that's a software program, achieved an average 94% accuracy rate, higher than the lawyers who achieved an average rate of 85%. It took the lawyers an average of 92 minutes to complete the NDA issue spotting, compared to 26 seconds for LawGeek AI. The longest time taken by a lawyer to complete the test was 156 minutes, and the shortest time was 51 minutes. If you look at the comparison, the obvious conclusion is if you have a sufficient-sized legal office, you want to make sure you have access to the software. James Mattis, not surprisingly, made a speech this week and announced we need space weapons. It's the inevitable conclusion of the Fortress America vision, plus the economics of what it means to try and provide both an offensive and defensive strategy related to the global reserve currency. Mattis said, let me just read it, "We are going to have to be prepared to use offensive weapons in space should someone decide to militarize it and go on the offensive," said Mattis, according to RT. "In any competitive sport in the world, you cannot simply pay defense and win," Mattis added. "This is not an area where we want to be second place. Space is, quote, critical to our economy. It's critical to our way of life. We've grown reliant on it," Mattis said. "In addition to the surveillance and military intelligence roles, U.S. satellites are used for navigation, communication, commerce, and banking." So if you read our wrap-up in 2015, Space, Here We Go, or first quarter, the space-based economy, one of the things you know is that was an inevitable shift that was coming. The president has indicated that the Russian missile INF treaty may be up for renegotiation. The Russians say renegotiation is not going to happen. Let's pray this is an election ploy and not another effort to keep encircling the Russian bear with more missiles closer and tearing up our agreements. A final comment on the U.S. The size of the deficit has been extraordinary since President Trump was elected. And of course, the effort to rebuild the military, very, very significant, and very expensive. And of course, the question is, you see that provide a lot of fiscal stimulus to the economy. And at the same time that the tax reform has brought a lot of capital back. And the question is, that has helped to keep a strong American economy relative to the rest of the world, and a strong stock market compared to the rest of the world for some period of time. The question is, can it continue? I put a link up to a piece called "The Economy is Great Really for Now" by Sharma, who is the global strategist for Morgan Stanley, which is quite good. He makes the case that the emerging markets and markets around the world are improving and set to expand compared to the U.S. He underestimates, I think, the importance of the covert flows. The big question is, where has the $21 trillion been reinvested, and how will that advantage the U.S. and the Fortress America vision vis-a-vis the rest of the world? So we've seen the Chinese and Asian stock markets significantly underperform their GDP. And given their growth rates, I can see why he takes that position. But the covert flows in this are so big that they're really, to me, a $64,000 question. So let's turn to Europe. Angela Merkel announced this week that she's not going to continue her leadership position in her party, which means she's also indicated she's not expecting to take the chancellorship position. That means Merkel is moving on. It wouldn't surprise me if there is an absolute relationship to the turnover in U.S. allies and the risk of indictments or variety of issues coming out, including the potential of of information coming out on bribes related to the Iran deal. We've talked about that on the Money and Market. I think Merkel is moving on to get out of the firing range. And it's all part of the sort of post-coup leadership emerging and the financial coup leadership turning over. It's definitely going to weaken the EU, although if you look at some of the German leaders who could emerge, they're strong, but they're likely to be much more conservative. So it'll be interesting to see what it means to the EU. If anything, I think it means the EU could get reconfigured with more military and more really being a northern European phenomena. It's unknown what the impact on Brexit and the Brexit negotiations will be, but it's something which I think is important to watch. There's no doubt, turning to China and Asia, that the trade wars have put real stress on the Chinese system, which is highly leveraged. We see a new S&P report week before last on the Chinese local debt, which is significant. And you add that to the bank debt, which is also significant. You're talking about a very leveraged economy. Now, with a one-party system, it's easier to run that kind of leverage, but you wonder exactly how the Chinese economy is really doing. It certainly shows gangbuster growth, but again, it depends heavily on that rising leverage. Miles Kwok, who's a billionaire sort of on the run from the Chinese party and trying to ingratiate himself to the United States to be allowed to stay, so you have to take this with a grain of salt, gave an interview to Kyle Bass that was published on Real Vision TV out of Singapore, and he said that Jack Ma had been forced to turn over some or all of his stock to five members of the, sounds like the Communist Party, and predicted that Jack Ma would be jailed or assassinated within a year. The Chinese CEO that was killed when he was on tour in France, he implied was an assassination and said the same thing had probably happened to the head of Interpol, who was Chinese and has now disappeared on a trip to China. So clearly the politics are very tense. Let's see what happens to Jack. Might hate to see him jailed or assassinated within a year, so let's hope that doesn't happen. Clearly the PRC is moving to expand its power, both the military in the South China Sea and in Hong Kong. We see the bridge between the PRC and Hong Kong open. I tweeted a friend of mine who recently, or a subscriber recently, left Hong Kong and said, good time to be gone, because I think it really will. Hong Kong is really in danger of losing a lot of its very special and more free characteristics. We note that China, I've reported this before, but China in September denied Hong Kong port visit for the U.S. Navy amid the trade tensions, and that's a big one because the U.S. Navy has really depended on that report, on that port. So that's it for the roundup of this portion of the news. And all I can say is that we're coming into an election that has major impacts, not just domestically, but globally. So remember that as you watch the news unfold on next Tuesday night. I'm having to FedEx my absentee ballot all the way from Switzerland. That's very expensive, but I continue to believe it's important to vote. Our hero this week is Dr. Gregor Courtine and his team at the École Polytechnique in Luzern in Switzerland. Take a look at the article and in the hero section. They developed an electrical implant technique that allows the paralyzed to walk again. It's quite remarkable. They tell the story in the article of three men who've been able now to walk. And you can imagine if you're paralyzed and a doctor creates a way for you to begin to walk again. It's a very special and miraculous thing. So just a reminder that great people are doing great things all the time. Our movie this week is Dare to be Wild. It was suggested by a wonderful subscriber. It tells the It's a sort of fictionalized version of a true story of an Irish woman, Mary Reynolds, journey from a rank outsider to winner of the gold medal at the Chelsea Flower Show. There's even a drop-in part by someone playing Prince Charles. And it's a nice movie, and it's a reminder of the importance of really staying focused on your passion and believing that you can do something that you believe is important to contribute to the world. And it really tells the story of some lovely people who love to grow and plant, which is something I admire tremendously. Our interview this week is one for the food series that Harry did with a wonderful dentist from Cincinnati. And I thought, given everything that's going on, it might be good to focus on something we control. We control who our dentist is. We control whether we have good habits in terms of taking care of our teeth. I think it's very important to have a good dentist and very important to have a good relationship with your dentist. And so I thought, this is a week we want to talk about something we really do have control over. It just seemed like a period when everything was out of control. And of course, Harry has a way of making even tough topics like this very, very juicy. So Dr. Andrew Kilgore, clearly a very fascinating, wonderful guy who also shares a love of the outdoors of Montana with Harry. Harry spends a lot of time running around in the wilderness area in Montana where his ranch is. Okay, Ask Catherine. We have a lot of questions, so I'm going to go through them quickly and not read all of them. Wonderful email from someone who's Chinese American and understands the challenges of going back and forth between the cultures and expresses concern about whether the sort of the Asian invasion is going to cause deterioration in the relationship between Asians and Americans. Anyway, so I would encourage you to read it. It's very, very well written and intelligent comments. You mentioned that you'd like me to meet your friend in D.C. I'll let you know when I'm in the D.C. area. It sounds like somebody I'd love to meet. I would just point out, I think Asians are deeply admired in America and have integrated in. The real problem is both in Americans and Asians, we have a real growth and explosion of hypermaterialism. And I think the divide is between Americans who are not hypermaterialistic and noting Asians who are. But it's a problem all the way around, and some of it is generational. I will tell you, when I was running Hamilton Securities, we had many different cultures in what was a relatively small population. And at any given time, we had, say, 49 max internal employees, but then sort of dedicated professionals, and we'd swing up to about 100. And so it would be anywhere from 50 to 100 people. So one day we took a training day just to improve sort of communication, and we required each group, based on what their culture was, usually a national background, to give a presentation on their history, their art, their music, and their food. And so people would cycle around in groups and experience and hear lectures on all of these different things and try the ethnic food of whatever group it was. And we had a tremendous result. We fell in love with each other's cultures and traditions. So I would say, if you want to improve the communication, introduce people to Chinese culture, Chinese art, Chinese music, and Chinese food. And the more they learn and get to know about all the incredibly positive things that the Chinese culture and Chinese people offer them, I think it will help to cross the divide. Dear Catherine, it's been a long overdue email. Okay, so this person is a software developer, and they've been in Europe. Another long and very interesting email. And the question is, should they go to work for a corporation and pay off their debt, or would that be selling out? My recommendation is to get a good paying gig in Europe. There are plenty of good companies who are doing perfectly reasonable and intelligent things. The nature of our world is you have to deal with digital systems. We all do. And so I'd find a good company and get a paying gig. If you can do something lawful in Switzerland, it would be great. Europe is much more livable right now, I would say. Anyway, I would make sure it's something where you can develop new skills. I'd pay off your debt, put money in the bank, and use it to fund your next entrepreneurial gig. Eventually, your entrepreneurial gigs will hopefully become self-supporting. But I would just make sure you do a great job so you get great references if you need to dip back into the corporate world. So I think, I don't know, you know, on our investment screen or my investment screen for Solaria Investment Advisory Services, I've underwritten literally hundreds of great companies that I think are perfectly sound and perfectly fine. Then the next one is a recommendation for a website on targeted individuals, Richard Lighthouse. I agree, it's very, very good. I've posted it before, but I posted it again, and then you make some comment on Chris Hedge's new book. Someone sent in the article, which we posted several times, about the secret meeting that changed rap music. If you haven't read it, just do a search for the secret meeting that changed rap music and destroyed a generation. Question is the story true? I believe that the story is probably true. If it's not true, the gist of the story is true, which is Hollywood really and the music industry really took rap from what it was, which was a form of poetry and street art, and turned it into something very violent and designed to feed the divide and conquer. Then the next person sent me a video of a very charming young Austrian composer. I think she's currently about 12 or 13. She composed her first opera at the age of 7. I've posted her videos before, but you reminded me of her. I hadn't seen the new video you sent, which I loved. And it's posted as a link with her new violin concerto, which we'll publish as our Friday music tomorrow. And it's really funny. She sounds like Feral talking about why would I want to do ugly music? Anyway, so check it out on the Friday music tomorrow. Hello, I'm a subscriber of your Solaria Report. You announced your visit to Switzerland and Zurich and Basel on the 25th of October. Is your report on this visit up yet? I haven't written a report on my time in Switzerland. What I do, if you look at my Twitter feed, I usually tweet out just sort of reports on what I'm up to. I'm near Dornach in Basel, so I went to see the Steiner Gerdianum and Steiner anthroposophy-related things over in Basel. Anyway, you can see the tweets. But when I've been in Basel, there's been a fabulous autumn festival, so we've been going down to the autumn festival, and I got to ride the big Ferris wheel. It's a great way to see the Rhine. Anyway, this is the first Money in Markets that I've done since I got to Switzerland. The last Money in Markets did before I left for Italy was in Bavaria. Then you say, if so, please let me know under which section I might find it. I would check out the Twitter feed. I'm an independent asset manager in Switzerland and do find your charts and comments very compelling. And then some information about what else he reads and why it's familiar with our kind of information. What is your view on the gold stacked up in the bunkers around Basel, which needs to be returned to the royal family of Manchuria? I don't know anything about it, and I'd welcome information if you have it. We have developed enough of a base in Switzerland that I think we should indeed have a Zurich lunch or dinner when I'm back in the summer of 2019. I'm usually in Zurich once or twice a year. So I have a lot of great allies and friends in Switzerland and southern Germany. And so I expect to be in Zurich at least once or twice a year for the foreseeable future. Hi, Catherine. We hope this email finds you doing well. So then this is a wonderful couple from California. It's just great people. I love them to pieces. They've come across a delightful book, The Typewriter Revolution. and here's how the book begins, The Typewriter Manifesto. The revolution will be typewritten. They asked me if I'd like a copy. I said, absolutely. As many of you probably know, I just finally got my new manual typewriter from Romania. Hi, Catherine and Salieri team. I thought you might appreciate this quote, the story of how Wall Street was meddling with political outcomes in Russia. Actually, this is an old story. We have a couple of interviews with Ann Williams on the last, Ann Williamson on the last round of meddling of Wall Street with Russia. I strongly recommend those Salieri reports to you. Hi, Catherine. In a recent interview, you expressed concern with navigating the modern health system, and then they ask whether you should get an ST, sexually transmitted disease test, or whether there was a danger of being in the databases. I think this is a real problem. You know, if I had my druthers, I would have my, any tests or any blood I given would go to a specialized clinic in a safe jurisdiction, which would not be the United States, and I would probably use an anonymous name or a pseudonym. I think you have to be very careful. So I would find an exceptionally reputable lab and assume that it's, you know, that it's not going to be private. So you just have to assume that it's, I've done a lot of research on medical tourism, trying to figure out if there's a place you could go where it is safe, but I'm not satisfied. I found the answer, and I would love for any subscribers who have ideas of what jurisdictions or labs could be safe to let us know. Then somebody had another recommendation on how to organize news trends and stories. And in fact, we have, it takes too many clicks to get around. We've done some changes to make it easier, but I have a new idea to make it much easier. And we're going to try that next week. So check it out in a week or two and see if that helps. But I agree with you. We've got to make it easier. It's a matter of getting the software to do what we want. Hi, Catherine. I just resubscribed after a year's break, and I'm really impressed at the quality of content you're putting out now. Salieri has always been a valuable research tool, but now with guests like Ulrich Groniger, Hugo de Garis, and Catherine Horton, it's now my first port of call as I try to figure out puzzles like mind control, AI, and breakthrough science. Wow, that's a great compliment. I appreciate it. We work really hard to sleuth out the best people. I want to ask about what you described as doubling down on climate BS in last week's Money and Market. Why are they only just now doing this? I thought that when Trump was elected, we would hear nothing but how he was an evil climate denier and prioritizes the economy over the future of the planet. Instead, the main focus seemed to be on his character, imagination, just plain name-calling. You'd think that if we really believed that the future of humanity was at stake due to climate change, they would have hit this issue nonstop. But even after Trump withdrew from the Paris Agreement, there was nowhere near the level of pushback one would expect given previous rhetoric. Do you think that perhaps there's an active avoidance of discussion here? Kai-Fu Lee has just informed us that collection of data will drive AI development. We know that at a bare minimum, smart meters and smart appliances will be sending out huge amounts of data about us, all in the name of a service of reducing climate change. Could they be in fear of what happens if people ask too many questions about these technologies? Are the Democrats hoping to make climate change an emotionally charged, don't ask questions or be ostracized issue for midterms for as short a time as possible? I think this is happening for a couple reasons. One is with the financial coup over, they need a new financial tax scheme. And so there's a real, whether it's carbon trading or carbon controls, there's a massive new financial scam coming around this. That's number one. But the bigger one right now immediately that's driving the train is 5G is really running into serious resistance. And the more people understand what it does to their health, their sleep, their consciousness, the more pushback they're going to get. And that's, you know, I don't think people have begun to realize how much more central control is possible thanks to 5G. So I think they're trying to find a way to really push 5G and all the data collection with the quote-unquote smart grid. And they're hoping to steamroll it as part of saving, quote, saving the environment. If you haven't looked at Paul Hawkins' latest effort, it's a perfect example of this kind of unbelievably disgusting promotion. Oh, you know, save the planet. you know, the planet's in terrible crisis, we're all going to die, and there's one way you can save it, and that's with the smart grid. It's quite amazing. Anyway, but I think those are the drivers, is to try and overwhelm the 5G pushback and then come up with a new financial scheme. In any case, I'd like to recommend Brandon Schulenberger's book, The Climate Wars. I've ordered that. And then a video on Stephen Mollier's video, 97% Consensus. I think I've posted that before. Hello, Catherine. In the following article, I found a paragraph which supports your view that defense contractors run the world. Well, I think Mr. Global runs the world, but I think defense contractors are an important piece. I agree with you that Joseph Farrell has a big brain. This is a new question. I agree with you that Joseph Farrell has a big brain, but you two together equals AI. I've been studying conspiracy theories, alternative media for 40 years, but you two together connect more dots than I've ever imagined possible. It's interesting, we have very different knowledge bases and they dovetail very nicely. Part of it is Joseph has a real natural ability to grok economics. You know, so I can start throwing financial and economic data with him and he picks it up and runs with it quite quickly. He's very good at it. Please inform Joseph in the spirit of George Ann Hughes, he needs to play something in her honor on his new organ. George Ann is how I discovered Joseph, and Joseph is how I discovered you. George Ann was special. Yes, George Ann was very, very special. She ran a radio show for many years that did some, just a score of great interviews with Joseph. I've promised that I won't request anything vis-a-vis the organ. What I've told him is he has to enjoy it. And I will never request that he compose or do anything, but I forwarded your message because he loved George Ann Hughes and he misses her terribly. So I think he'll be inspired by that. Hello, Ms. Fitz. This video and those therein should be quite helpful in your work. And then they suggested a video from Judge Anna Von Rietz, whose materials I've looked at before. Okay. Hi, Catherine. I have a question pertaining to Rambus Chartology. Rambus has Plunger occasionally post article for the subscribers. He has written several times of the post-bubble contraction. Have you read his articles? And if so, what are your thoughts? I've only read the one that we published recently with the third quarter Rambus Chartology. I don't think he understands the covert flows again, so I think the state of play is a little bit different. I think Plunger is missing the black budget piece, and it's often why I find myself disagreeing with a lot of economic analysis. But his ideas are very interesting, and I think it's worth reading, which is why we posted his piece with the latest Rambus Chartology. Then somebody sent a note about Tom Frank, who I'm not that familiar with, but I appreciate your sending, and we'll take a look at his book. Hi, Catherine. I appreciate the brief commentary by you and Dr. Farrell on weather modification and California fires. And they were suggesting we do a full Solaria report on the California fires. I would love to do that, but I'm looking for a person to write a book or build a significant library of research. I haven't seen anyone yet. But I think we need someone who's really gathered the material and evidence together. Okay, that's it for this week. Next week, exciting. Saker's back for the emerging multipolar world. We have a lot to talk about. And I'll be interviewing him on election day. So we won't know our results, but we will when I do money and markets next Thursday night. And again, I'll be doing that from New York. Then November 15th, we do the big theme for the third quarter wrap-up, megacities and the growth of global real estate companies. Very important to understand this trend. I think it's easy to understand. It's a lot easier to get your mind around than the rise of the Asian consumer. But very important. There's no doubt the world is rapidly urbanizing, a lot of that being an Asian and emerging markets phenomena. And then coming into Thanksgiving, perfect, November 22nd from the food series, our next interview, Harry Blaser with Bill Nyman. Please remember, until then, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.